I was under the impression that, you know, we were a constitutional republic and that I had rights. That's what I thought. And I told them, no, I'm not gonna. And then the fight was on, because I guess the DNR is not used to being told that we're not gonna comply. And they used the DNR, because the DNR are armed. And to go up against Michigan farmers, you gotta be armed. And they knew it. I guess what we really need to, the question we need to ask is, who benefits from this? Who benefits? Cui bono? Who benefits?
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we're going to talk about what some of the farmers in our country are dealing with. And I think it'll be eye-opening for many of you. It's Mark Barker. He has been venturing on this crusade to keep his farm going, and he's been fighting with the government for quite a long time, and he's going to share his story. It really ties into what ranchers around the country are also experiencing with different issues, and he gives us insight in what people can do, and very good interview. But before we get into that, I want to remind you that there's a free ebook on how to keep your pets from getting cancer. Dogs are getting cancer at over 50% rate, and cats aren't far behind. And this free ebook will help you understand what to feed your animals to virtually eliminate the chance of them getting cancer. I will have the link below. I really highly suggest that you grab it. It's free, so why not? And let's get into that interview now with Mark Barker. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you are in a fight for your life there on your farm, and you've been fighting for a long time to keep your farm going. Can you give us an overview of what your fight is and what you're doing?
I can. I retired from the military in 2004 and decided that I wanted to be a small farmer, and so I moved my family to Michigan from my last duty assignment, which was in Montana. And we took up a small farm, 80 acres, and started to explore what we could do to make a living. And so we started raising pastured poultry. We grazed cattle, and we got into a pig known as the Mangalitsa pig. It's an import from Hungary, and things were going quite well with that pig. We were breeding them and selling them, and it was going quite well. Then in 2011, I was making a delivery to one of my restaurants, and the chef told me that it's too bad that we're not going to be able to get your pigs anymore. And I said, what are you talking about? And he says, well, the Department of Natural Resources, known as the DNR, has classified your pigs as feral pigs, and you have to get rid of them. So apparently the DNR had gone to my customers and told all my customers that they couldn't even have that meat in their freezers because it was illegal. That's what they said. So when I looked into it, apparently what had happened is the DNR, which is an unelected bureaucracy here in the state of Michigan, had created a regulation, and they claimed that pigs that had certain characteristics were feral. So they said they had a list of 9 characteristics, and it ranged anything from the coloration to the skeletal structure. And then my favorite was number 9, which stated other characteristics not currently known. So it doesn't even really make sense. A feral animal is an animal that is not under the husbandry of human beings. So it would either be an animal that's been abandoned or escaped, like a feral cat, feral dog. And down south, they have problems with feral pigs. But up here in the north, we don't have them because they would never survive in our winters. So we thought that they were misguided in their assertion that our pigs were feral. So we confronted them, and we were told that's the way it is. and you got to get rid of your pigs by April 1st, 2012, or you'll be arrested and we will fine you $10,000 per pig, and we'll put a lien against your farm if you don't. And I wasn't accustomed to the way a lot of these bureaucracies operate. And because I had just come out of the military a few years before, I kind of stayed on the farm after I got out. I didn't have a whole lot of contact. And I was under the impression that, we were a constitutional republic and that I had rights. That's what I thought. And I told them, no, I'm not gonna get rid of my animals. I paid a lot of money for them and I'm making a living doing it. I can't afford to get rid of them. And then the fight was on because I guess the DNR is not used to being told that we're not going to comply. That's their thing. They want to bring you into compliance. Even though you have constitutional rights, but you have to comply with their regulations. And so the fight was on, and we sued them for clarification. Our lawyer said that we should. I had never hired a lawyer before, and at that time, so I didn't know much about lawyers either. And my senator had me down to Lansing, the state capital, to talk to a committee, an ag committee. And the fight was on. Then the attorney general kind of piled on with the Department of Natural Resources and represented them. So I had to have my own lawyer that I was paying for, and then my tax dollars were paying for the opposition. So I was in a bad position. But I didn't really have any place to go. I mean, I had to either stay with it and see it through the end or just quit and go away. And the story got a lot of attention because I would start making YouTube videos and just tell my story. And the day that we went to we had a hearing because the state moved to have the case dismissed. Because there were so many people that were calling Lansing and calling the DNR and saying, we don't like this, and this is not consistent with American lifestyle and freedom and things like that. And so they at the 11th hour, I mean, I wanted a jury trial because I wanted the state agency to have to claim before God and country that any pig with a straight tail or a curly tail is a feral pig and that you have to get rid of it.
Wouldn't that be all pigs?
It would. Well, every one of the characteristics was applicable to any pig that walks the planet. And so, I mean, there was a lot of dark days in between. I began to tell you about this before, but they contacted us and they said that through our lawyer that on April 1st, 2012, that they were going to come arrest me and shoot all of our pigs and put a lien against our farm. And I really had no place to go. I had other animals that had to be taken care of, and I had no choice. I sent my wife and kids away, and I waited. I waited for him, and I let him know that I'd be waiting for him. And I thought that that was going to kind of be it. But they never came. There was several people that drove past the farm that night. I don't know who they were, but we live on a pretty desolate road, and but nobody ever came in person. And then it just became a letter. They'd send letters to my lawyer, and we'd have court hearings, and they would bring a whole bunch of agents, I guess, young men that were wearing black suits and packing heat. And
Did
it
they
was
have
just,
their black sunglasses on?
oh yeah,
And the black
you name
vans?
it. And they would have undercover people come to us, and it became a big deal. And the public didn't know everything that was going on. We didn't want it to turn into a standoff, an armed standoff like was going on out at Bundy's, but it was kind of the same thing. They were saying because of invasive species that we had to give up our right to our property and our Fourth Amendment right to our homes.
So what was the reason that they didn't like those pigs? Did they ever give you, I mean, because you brought these in, this is a legitimate
Yes.
thing that you were doing. There's nothing wrong with these pigs, right? Did they
No.
give you anything that says these pigs have an issue?
Well, yes, they did. They said that these pigs could become feral, and that feral pigs could destroy the countryside, and they could eat baby deer and little baby pheasants, and they dig up golf courses, and they do all kinds of damage, which is true. That is all true. The thing that they don't factor in is that human beings wouldn't like that, and human beings would hunt them down and kill them. So they're even saying that we have feral pigs in the state of Michigan now. They say we have between 5,000 and 7,000 of them running around the North Michigan woods. But I speak all over the state, and I always started off by saying, "Who's ever seen a feral pig?" And no one, except for one lady that worked for the Attorney General's office. Her uncle Tony saw one back in 73. That's the only one that we've ever that's ever raised a hand and said they know someone that's seen one. And the nature of feral pigs too, we have a lot of deer in the state of Michigan. They're getting hit on the road constantly, constantly. You see them everywhere. If there were feral pigs, they would be out by the road feeding off those dead deer, and everybody would see them. So it's not true,
So they're
but they're
afraid that your pigs are going to end up getting out and going wild and breeding and taking over the forest, even though
well,
they have no proof that this has ever happened.
correct. They have proof down in Texas that it happened. But see, what I was going to tell you is they give you an they spin up a problem. This is the problem, they say. Pigs can become feral and they can do a lot of damage. So we're going to preempt that with the answer. And the answer is we don't want any pigs being raised outside on pasture at all. Now, if it's in a confinement, that's fine. But what they were doing was they're setting a precedence. This was a Department of Agriculture operation. They used the DNR because the DNR are armed. And to go up against Michigan farmers, you got to be armed. And they knew it.
Going to take a quick break here from the interview to let you know about a diabetes summit. We have so many people that are affected with diabetes and type 2 diabetes. So many people are at risk for diabetes. One third of our children now are at risk for diabetes. So this diabetes summit will give you a lot of expert information. They have 30 plus expert videos and resources, 30 detailed transcripts. And I highly recommend that you look into this. And especially if you're one of those that are at risk for getting diabetes, you will learn a lot from this. And I will have the link below so that you can get access to it. There will be a free diabetes summit April 23rd through the 30th that I highly recommend that you watch. You'll learn a lot of things from that. So again, I'll have the link below. So let's get back into that interview now.
But the Department of Agriculture wants to have access to farmland. They want to have access to private property. Right now, they have access to public property, but my land, they have no access to, and they don't like that because they're the Department of Agriculture and they want to control what's going on. So the reasons that they gave me were false. They were totally false. What did they really want? I think that's what you're getting at. What
Yeah, I
did they?
wanted to know what they really want and if they're, it happened in Texas, so I want to explore that a little bit more, what really happened in Texas. And of course, I want to know what do they really want? What's their true agenda?
I think that's where people are now, especially anybody that's going to be listening to your show. What do they really want? That's what we have to be asking, because what they tell us they want is a lie. I mean, they're real good at that. This is about control of the food, right? The move towards industrial agriculture has, on paper, theoretically, been a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. It's an economic disaster, and without funds being taken from some Americans and given to other Americans, industrial agriculture would not work. It's been a environmental disaster because they we're kind of right back where we used to be back in the early 60s when industry was polluting the environment really bad. Now farming, industrial farming is polluting the environment really bad. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And I guess what we really need to, the question we need to ask is who benefits from this? Who benefits? Cui bono? Who benefits?
I would think it would be the big pig manufacturers, right? The people you'd be competing with.
Yeah, industrial ag, they certainly benefit from it. But
There's more to it.
there's a bigger picture, I think. This is about control of the food system. Industrial agriculture is centralized food production, so it can be turned off. Or if they have a really bad problem with it, you can lose a huge section of it. Where when you have a myriad of independent farms, you're always going to have a little bit of redundancy into the system to where you can have failures, but you won't have a total failure.
Yeah,
And
our infrastructure is more at risk when it's centralized versus being decentralized.
for sure, for sure. And there's a lot of reasons why it's not working out. Like around where I live, you have a lot of $10 an hour jobs with no benefits on these mega farms. Well, it's not really good for, my class of person. I mean, I can't really survive on that. But the people that wind up settling there, they have to settle for that. Whereas the small independent farmer, they're in the $75,000 to $125,000 range, and that's a good living. I mean, that's worth working hard for, rather than just be somebody that punches a clock 40 hours a week on an industrial farm. So it's not been good for the community either. It's been
No,
bad.
because now you're getting low wage jobs and not as much money. And now, is this happening all over the country? I mean, is Michigan just you're just an example of what all these different farmers are experiencing?
The answer to that would be no, actually. The central part of the United States, the Midwest, has very fertile soil and no rocks. Well, not no rocks, but less rocks. I mean, if you go to Maine, if you go to New England, that's where I am right now, the soil is rocky. It's hard to perform industrial agriculture here because they're looking for open spaces, big open spaces where you can get a big equipment in, one man on one huge piece of equipment plowing, 25 rows at a time. That's efficient and it's expedient. But for who? That's the question. For who? It's expedient for the industrial agricultural complex because, the big equipment manufacturers do really well. I equate this to war in a way. Instead of being husbands of the land and loving the land, they conquer the land and they do it with chemicals and heavy metal. So it's sort of a war that they conduct. And it's not sustainable because the soil is wearing out pretty bad. And you can throw petrochemical fertilizer at it. But every year you got to throw a little bit more and a little bit more. And it gets to a certain point, like out in the eastern part of the state, they're actually having to resort to composting, So
Well,
it's,
so what do you think they're, you said they want access to land. I know in the West, the amount of land they have is enormous. After the Louisiana Purchase, we have so much public land. But the farther east you go, the less public land it is. Do you think that their ultimate goal is to convert a lot of these private lands to public lands, or do they just want to have access to the private land?
they want, no, I don't think they want to convert it. I think they want to, like the Department of Agriculture in Michigan, what they want is they want control of the process. So I'm an American citizen. I work hard, I save my money, I buy 80 acres of land. It belongs to me, and I say what I'm going to do there. That's the beauty of being an American citizen. It's
That was what
freedom.
it was. That was our what we were founded on.
Exactly. Exactly. We don't need the crown telling us what we're going to farm. We don't need that. Declaration of Independence said we can decide on our own. We know best for ourselves. So I start farming Mangalitsa pigs on my 80 acres. It's my business what I do. But the Department of Agriculture says, oh no, we've gone to college and we have this degree, and we have a lot of us that went to college to MSU, and we're going to decide for you. We're going to help you, right? And when I tell them, no, I don't want your help, then they say, you're going to take our help. One way or another, you're going to take our help.
So, do
And
you think their determination to force you to take their help actually becomes their reason? Because they just don't like someone not listening to them. So that the whole thing becomes these guys are going to listen to us no matter what, no matter even if what they're trying to do is wrong, it becomes a fight to make sure people are subservient to them.
I think so. I think that's a part of it. But I also back up from there, and I think there's a bigger picture. Where do they get the support to do that? I mean, if I were the governor of the state of Michigan and I heard that this was going on, I'd be down. I would leave my office and go down to their office, and I would say, explain this to me, will you please? Because I'm the governor of the state, and I took an oath to protect and defend the constitutional rights of the people of this state. So can you explain this to me? And if I were the attorney general, I'd be doing the same thing. But the state of Michigan, the governor, the attorney general, and all the minions, they're on board with this program because they're at the top of the chain, right? They're at the top of the ladder. And they have all the resources, and we've given them all the resources. They have all the departments, Department of Environmental Quality, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Human Resources. That's one they can use on you if you get too far out of line. So the position that we find ourselves in is we have to rely on ourselves. And most American citizens don't even know that they can rely on themselves. They don't know the Constitution that they stand on. But I stood on it, and I can tell you it's rock solid foundation. These corporations don't care about it, but when push comes to shove, it did work for me. It definitely worked
Well,
for me.
that's important. Now, let's get back to the question that you were saying it's not happening all over the country. It's happening in Michigan. Now, are there other states that it's happening in? And do you think it's going to become something that's going to happen in other states? Or is it really confined to Michigan? And if it's confined to Michigan, why?
I don't believe it is confined to Michigan. I believe it's confined to the Midwest because of the fertile soils and
Okay, that's what I was getting at.
expanses. But if you go to the West Coast or the East Coast, farming is a lot more difficult. And the nature of, let's say, a New England farmer would be he's just got to be a hardcore, diligent, tenacious, never give up Yankee to squeeze a living out of that ground. And he's got to be smart too. He's got to use it and be a proper steward. And industrial farming isn't like that. Industrial farming is kind of piecework. Big equipment, chemical, a lot of diesel fuel. So industrial agricultural complex, the industrial ag complex isn't interested in the rocky ground on the west or the east. They want the central part of the United States, and they've staked it out. I used to feel like we could get a handle on this and we could preserve our constitutional rights, but we all know that there's a lot of money in drug cartels, right? But we never really think about food cartels. And that's pretty much what this is. There's a huge amount of money on the table here. And if we can reduce all the people that are involved in it to $10 an hour employees or people that aren't from this country, then there's a lot of fat that rises to the top that the top echelon can take advantage of. And it seems like the top echelon is these departments. They're kind of the go-to people to make this work, and the corporations at the top.
Yeah, the corporations want to have complete control of the monopoly, but again, that's a national security issue because our infrastructure is controlled by too few instead of it being, out wide. Now, do you know other farmers that are also experiencing this, and are you talking?
Yeah, I do. I know plenty of them. But most of the time, it never gets to the point where it has with me, because if you're a farmer, your field of vision is quite narrow, and you don't really think about your constitutional rights. I mean, you have enough to do worrying about too much rain or not enough rain, or the wind, or infertile soils, or disease that might hit your flock or herd or whatever. So you have enough on your plate, and industrial agriculture has, they have a lot of lawyers that sit in offices and figure this stuff out, how to take advantage of these guys. So, like, when we were told that if we did not depopulate our animals, we would be given a fine of 10,000 per animal, I think most of the people that were given that letter said, "That's it, I'm out of business. The government has told me I can't do this, I gotta depopulate." But in my case, I said, "Wait a minute." And I had a level of ignorance about how these state agencies work, and I didn't know how all-encompassing they are. They kind of control everything. All these departments kind of work together. And so I said, "No, I have constitutional rights." And some of it was ignorance, because I thought that we want to do things right and proper.
Oh yeah, ignorance is, but that's why the ignorant tends to get stuff done. Because when you know too much, you don't want to make the fight. But being ignorant helps sometimes.
I actually
I know
got a
you're like,
letter.
yeah, I know. Would you redo the fight? Would you redo the fight if you started over right now, today?
That's a tough question, Sarah. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I know.
Because it affects your family. You have to put a lot of energy into thinking about it. Because when you go into battle and you put everything on the line, if you don't pay attention to what you're doing, you can lose everything. And we could have, because they're prepared to take everything from us. It's not over by any means, because they still want control. It didn't end, even though the case was dismissed. I mean, they own the courts too. So it went to a court of law and they got it dismissed because they said that I had complied. So they made a claim that I complied and the judge said, "Okay, case dismissed." I didn't comply with anything. That was the point.
Well, that's
But
good though. Them saying you complied maybe can work in your favor. Well, I'm compliant and I had my na same pigs. Why am I not compliant now?
well, they because now Well, yeah.
I
I
mean,
mean,
you
they're not
could use it
compliant
against
with
them,
my
is my
pig.
point.
The latest thing is they came after me for whatever else I do. I raise a lot of chickens too.
Anything they can go after you for, they're going to go after you for now.
So they went into one of my retail stores and they took some of the products and they told the store owner, a guy I've been doing business with for 10 years, they said, "Baker's under investigation." And so the store owner, he would not probably have told me. It was one of his employees that told me, because when if he tells me I'm under investigation, and then I make a phone call to the Department of Ag, then they're going to bear down on him. Now, that's their latest thing. They go after my employees and they go after
It's just
my
terrible.
customers.
We've turned
Yeah,
into a fascist society. Okay, so
it is fascist. That is a good observation right there.
now these other farmers that you said that a lot of them, did they go actually go out of business?
They either change their process or they quit.
And the ones that quit, what happened to their land? They sold it? Did the government buy it, or did they just sell it? Or is it just sitting
They
there?
sell it. It goes into the industrial complex.
It usually
And
goes
that's
to the big farmers.
I'm sorry?
Does it usually go to the big farmers, the big ag companies?
The big ag companies is a better way to say it. It's not big ag farmers.
The
They're
big
not.
ag companies. That's who usually takes them over.
Yeah. And
So they
they
won. I mean, that I think that is their goal. The big ag companies want that land.
I agree. And those corporations can push and control the agencies like the Department of Agriculture and like the Department of Natural Resources. You know, mining companies, they push the DNR people to get what they want, you know,
Let's
and
talk
it will
about
be.
what the problem is with big ag. And I know we have a it's a national security issue. You can't have a few people owning everything because you could turn down the system overnight. But when it's spread out, we're much more secure. But besides that, what are the big problems with big ag having all these farms? I know the government walking all over our Constitution, awful. We have fascism. All that, but what else? Because I know that there's some other bigger issues, and how does it affect you and others?
Oh, here's how it affects me. I can name you 10 ways that it affects me. The chemical usage, and it's kind of interesting that Dow Chemical is right here in Midland, Michigan, you know, and the attorney general of the state who wants to be the next governor, he's one of the Dow kids. That's kind of interesting. But they use a product known as glyphosate, or otherwise known as Roundup. And it is a herbicide, and it will kill everything. But then they go and they genetically modify the different crops, like corn. They'll modify it with the gene of a flounder, and then they can spray the Roundup right on the corn, and it won't kill it. So, but it'll kill everything else. Well, then that winds up in our food system. So we wind up eating that glyphosate, you know, in a roundabout way, because corn's in everything. And then that glyphosate, which is a herbicide, gets in our guts, and it kills off all the plant life in our
All of
gut.
our flora.
All of our flora, yeah. So it's
And
really
that's
bad stuff.
why our digestive systems don't work.
That's right. That's right. And that's why this is being outlawed in Europe and other places. And it's not really helping the system, because the fields have they're resisting this war that's being waged on them, and the plant life is adapting to it. So they're having to turn up the heat on this glyphosate to make it kill more stuff. And so it's harder on us Americans. But it gets in the water, it's in all of our wells. My well is 60 feet deep, and it's got glyphosate in it. It's everywhere, because it doesn't break down in the environment. It's really bad stuff. So that's one way. The other way is the heavy equipment that they use. They have to, in order to get it on fields, they have to go in and drain the fields. So they change our environment. They're draining water off of these fields and into our rivers and streams, which takes all the glyphosate into the rivers and streams. And the rivers and streams, you know, everything will die, and then they'll fertilize the fields that runs into the rivers and streams, and then everything flourishes, and you can't even get down the stream with a canoe, because there's so much plant life in it. And then when everything dies, that stuff all gets flushed out to the, you know, the lakes and stuff. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad the way they're doing. Like, if we had a bunch of cows that were spread out over the whole state, and every one of them pooped at the same time, it's not a big deal. But when you have them all stuffed into a building, and there's 5,000 of them in there, and they all manure constantly, then you have a big manure issue. And they wind up spreading it, and the radius that they're spreading it is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the concentration of manure is, it's not going away. It's just too much. So it's having a big effect on, you know, the way our environment smells, and the plant life, and the animal life leaves because they can't take it. So this, it's not working. It's just not working.
So why are you sticking with this fight? And I know I asked you the question, would you do it again? But
Yeah.
why are you sticking with it, and what would you tell other farmers of the importance of this fight? Because there's a bigger picture long term that we're looking at, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Well, with me, I was active duty. I joined the Air Force when I was in my early 20s, and I stayed in for a career. You wind up staying in, oddly enough, because you have younger people that are working for you. And, I had people that took care of me when I was brand new in, and it's a rough environment and it's a dangerous environment. And, but we make it through. So I stayed for 20 years. And in that time, I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I actually lost people along the way, and I remember them. I remember like conversations with them, so they become part of you. You remember those people, men. They were all men. And when I began doing something like farming, that for me was kind of therapeutic. I was not going to be able to go out into the civilian workforce for a little while, and I knew it. And so I started farming. And when I had state agencies that we were paying that were saying, you can't do what you want to do because we say so. And then I have this constitution over here that in the Fifth Amendment, it says that my life, my liberty, and my property is protected under due process of law. I looked at this and the scales on this, I didn't like. I mean, I could have just left and bought a house in town and got a job in a factory and forgot all about it, I suppose. But the fact that there were enemies within my country that were trying to dictate how the process was going to work illegally, unlawfully, that bothered me. And I said, no, I can't. For the memory of, or it's not really a memory because the people that I lost along the way, they live in me, right? It's like an energy thing, I think. And they're saying to me, no, don't let them do it. Don't let them do it. We have innocent people amongst us that are being crushed by these unlawful bullies. Don't let them do it. And, I didn't have to arm wrestle them. I didn't have to shoot it out with them. I just told them, no, I'm not doing it. And I'm telling you, America, most of these bullies, they don't know what to do. When you tell them no, they don't know what to do, because most of the time they don't get to the point where they have to exercise any force against you. Now they did with me, but I'm kind of a different type of person. Being career military, being in for 20 years, confrontation is a part of life in the military. And I don't mean like combat or anything like that. It's just that when you're in with a bunch of other men that are all trying to do the same thing, there's confrontation and you just have it all the time. And out of that confrontation, we have a success rate that's very good, flying our airplanes and doing the things that we're asked to do by our president. And so I was a little bit more hardened than the average guy. And when I told them no, then they would draw another line. And then I would step over that and they'd draw another line. Like they said they'd arrest me, and then they said they would arrest me in front of my children, right? And then they said that they would arrest my children. And then they said that they would put a $700,000 fine. I have it in writing from the Attorney General of the state of Michigan. A $700,000 fine against, an American GI that just wants to farm and live his life. $700,000 fine. I have it. And now he wants to be our governor. And that's like I was telling you before, how bad people will wear something ugly like that as a badge of courage. That's his badge that he wears amongst his peers that seek to dominate and destroy instead of waging peace and prosperity and, good food and clean water. I know that sounds kind of tree huggerish, but
Yeah, but so what? I mean, that's the whole point, right? I mean, that we have a good place to live. How do you think this is going to end? Not just with you, but with the country. I mean, are we essentially at non-violent civil war going on right now?
Well, I don't think it's nonviolent. I don't think it's nonviolent. When I have armed men come up my driveway, and this has happened several times, the last time, real quick, this is a great story. The last time I had given a ham, a prosciutto ham, to a chef friend of mine, guy that I became friends with over the years. I mean, politically, we're totally different, and we probably wouldn't hang out together, but I talk with him about once a month, and I visited him in the hospital one time. And so he was going to be in an online magazine, and he posed with this ham. You know what I'm saying? It's got the hoof on it, and it's got the skin is still on it. He didn't cut into it. It's like a trophy for him. He's probably still hasn't cut into it. But anyway, he posed in a magazine with this, and the Department of Agriculture got wind of that. And they generated a search warrant for my home, my vehicles, and my records, which means my computer. That's what they really wanted. So they saw a picture in an online magazine, and out of that, they generate a search warrant, and they got a judge to sign it. And I'm telling you the truth, that's all it was a picture of a ham. It hadn't been cut into, hadn't been sold in a restaurant or retail store or anything like that. It was just a picture. And, that's in my mind. I mean, when you live through that, that's pretty vicious when you can have people who their handle is food inspector. So food inspectors can generate search warrants. I'm wondering, can food inspectors have us arrested, for improper sanitation? I don't know, but that actually happened. And when that happens, and you have, I had state police that drove up my lawn and set their cars in such a way that we couldn't get away. And they're all armed. And then the inspectors came closer into the house, and they were going to perform this search. When that happens, I don't think it's nonviolent. I think the only thing that didn't happen that day was shooting, but they came prepared to do that. But I'll tell you, here's the silver lining of this. The state police that came, I identified one of them as a fellow military member, and I went over and I talked to him, and I said, "Do you guys have any idea why you're here?" And they said, "No, we're just detailed here in the morning." They were being used as the armed advocate, And when I told them, "You're being used. This is over a picture of a ham." Now, these state policemen, they're sheepdogs like me. I mean, they are the people that are re ready to lay their lives on the line for the weaker amongst us. And they're being used by the Department of Agriculture to perform a search warrant, Fourth Amendment.
So
That
what did
that's
they
they.
do? What were there? What did happen then?
I told them, "You guys are going to have to stand down. Our house sits on a hill," and I said, "You gotta." I could have ordered them down to the base of the driveway, but I said, "I just need you to back down a little bit," because I wanted the inspectors to be alone, because they're shaky, they're not armed, and they didn't know what was going to happen. And as soon as I told them they were going to have to wait, because I'm going to call up some of my friends to come over to witness this, they got scared and they left. So they came armed up. That's where they're at on this whole thing. And by my friends, you might think I'm a biker or something like that, or a bunch of my GI friends. No, it's housewives and an engineer friend. And I just needed witnesses there because they were going to search my home for 3 days, 12 hours a day, over a picture of a ham. Think about how that would be. I mean, having some food inspector digging through your chest of drawers and looking at your stuff. I mean, it's.
Why was the picture of ham so offensive to him? Because you weren't supposed to be producing that meat anymore, and that's why they got upset, or what?
No, I was never prohibited from raising my animals. When the court case was dismissed, I was granted what they called a carve out. So I could produce these animals, but only me.
That's
And
terrible.
but they say that anytime meat goes on the shelf, at a restaurant or retail that they have to put their stamp of approval on it, right? And they didn't know where that animal had been processed. So instead of them calling me and saying, where was it processed? They just initiated a search warrant. Now,
Very
I didn't
abusive.
tell
It was just abusive.
them. It was totally abuse. It was meant to make me not, bring me into compliance so I wouldn't be so
They're beating
vocal.
you down so that you'll just give up. So,
That's
where do you
right.
think this whole thing is going to end? I mean, is what's going to happen here? Are we who what do we need to do? Give us some advice. Give us your
Well,
wisdom through all this, because if people like you don't fight, the big companies will take over. They'll be in cahoots with the government, and eventually it will become just a few companies owning everything.
that would be terrible. That would be terrible if that happened. And that's what we didn't want to happen. And we were to the point where we said it's gone too far and there's nothing we can do. Well, I think people have to know that good prevails. Good will prevail. And our Constitution is good. If you get it and read down through it, it is very good. And the other day I heard coming out of Washington, I heard return to rule of law. And what that refers to is if you get a hold of the Constitution and you get a hold of the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, just read through them, it's just a page. If everything that our government does is seen through that prism of rule of law, of it has to square with our Bill of Rights, our government is there to serve us. They are not there to make for themselves and use us as slaves, which is pretty much what's going on right now. I think this could turn around really quickly, and we could return to a prosperous way of life and a calm way of life and waging peace amongst each other. I really think we could. I'm not just
So
saying this
when
because.
farmers have the same situation you have, what should they do? Should they fight like you are? Because right now everybody's complying right away, right? What should they do?
Well, I hate to say this, but it is true. A lot of times, the government that we have right now is not the same government that we will have 2 years from now. It's not the same government that we had 2 years before. It changes with the people that are in it. And they have become quite criminal in a lot of ways. They will ask you to do things that you're not required to do, as if you're in some sort of confinement and they're your masters and they're going to tell you what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. Well, when that situation arises, it's sort of like if somebody comes into your home and starts telling you what you're going to do. You have to resist. You got to tell them no. That's got to be your first response is, I am an American citizen and I am a free man. We declared independence from England a long time ago, and I'm not gonna fall in line with what you want just because you want it. Most of these departments are doing the bidding of big industry. Big industry does not care about your constitutional rights. Fine, if you don't think that's true, see if you have constitutional rights when you go into a Walmart store or a Sam's or whatever. You don't have constitutional rights in there. If they say you can't carry a gun in, you can't carry a gun in. That's all there is to it. But when they start coming on our private property and telling us what we're going to do, or our public property and tell us what we're going to do, that's a whole nother thing coming. And I think you have to show that you're willing to do more than just say it. You have to put your face to it. Do like you, Sarah, all the time. Come right out and and talk openly about it. There's people who are afraid to talk openly because this government is intimidating in a lot of ways. And
And don't immediately fold, right?
don't immediately fold. I mean,
Call you, get advice.
sure. I advise people all the time. We have a lot of good people in government. I don't want to say that they're all bad. We just have some bad ones that have kind of gotten their badge of the way the government is now. You kind of rise up through the ranks by doing whatever you are told, good or bad. You know, if you're told to squash somebody's constitutional rights and you tell your boss, "Well, I can't do that. This guy's got constitutional rights," you will not be promoted, right? And that's 180 degrees from where it should be. If I took over the state of Michigan, let's say they made me the governor tomorrow, I would change things so radically where the servants would be briefed that they are the servants of these people and they are there to help these people, not to lord over them and be their jailers. And then I would get rid of this too many of them. I mean, there's way too many bureaucrats. There's so much tax money being spent on fat salaries for people that do nothing. I think a lot of these people need to go back into the workforce. But resistance is not futile. I mean, it's a good thing to do. If they're right, they're right. And I'm not saying to America here, let's break the law. Laws are good. Laws are things that we have all decided this is how we want to live as a society. But these outfits like the Department of Agriculture creating regulation and then treating it as though it's law, that's incorrect. That's totally incorrect. And the problems that we have in Michigan are due to poor leadership. That's what it comes down to. We just need a leadership change that will. I mean, we're going to swear in a new governor here, and he's going to be asked to do one thing, swear an allegiance to our constitutional rights. That's the one thing we ask him to do, and that's the one thing he will not do. And in this race that we have coming up right now, I've been a little bit involved in that because the different candidates court me as somebody that would bring a lot of people to, you know, their side or to their you know, their campaign. And I've worked my way down through several of the candidates because of their just lack of respect for our Constitution. You know, I take an oath of office, but there's this one guy that says, "Yeah, but you know, safety comes first." And so that's a very slippery slope because they can claim safety on many, many things.
You can
And
create a law to deal with safety. I mean, that's what the whole Congress is for. That's what, if there's truly a safety issue, you can fix it and do it through our normal means.
yeah. But
Correct,
we're a
right?
society that's been operating for close to 300 years now, and I don't think we need to make any more laws.
But
I
you
think
know
we
what
need
I'm saying. If something cuts some, let's say you get hold of some chemical like Roundup that's hurting everybody. There should be some ways that we can get that safety problem taken care of through our government today.
Well, there should. I mean, we have the Department of Environmental Quality, and all they have to do is go out into the environment and say, "Wow, look at how many parts per million of this we have. Was it here, you know, when the pilgrims landed? No. Why is it here now? And is it detrimental to human life? Yes. But the chemical manufacturers are so powerful and they own so many politicians, it's very difficult to do that. But this is what I'm saying. A leadership change would change all of that. I mean, a good leadership. If you had a good governor that took nothing but his oath to the Constitution to heart, nothing else. I always say if he just taped a copy of the Bill of Rights to his desk and has two pencils, a black one and a red one, when something comes across his desk that doesn't square perfectly with that Bill of Rights, it gets read through it. And then I would track it back if I was the governor. And if somebody sent that to my desk that was that foul that I had to draw a red line through it, I would be questioning their knowledge of the oath that they took to protect and defend the Constitution
It's
and the
time to
Oath.
clean them out. They're not the type of employees we want here. Well, how
Right.
can, how, go ahead.
Well, can you imagine if you had Democrats, you know, pointing the finger across the aisle at Republicans saying, "You guys, you don't follow your oath of office. And you had Republicans pointing the other way saying, you guys don't follow your oath of office. But instead, they smoke us with a bunch of issues that are designed to keep us,
Fighting each other and separate. Yes, absolutely. I think the whole left-right
That's
paradigm,
the
all this stuff is a farce. So how do people get hold of you? And, other farmers that might be having the same issue as you, they can talk to you. There needs to be some kind of coalition forming, so that you guys can all learn and get strength from each other and courage from each other. So how can people reach you?
Well, we have a website. It's bakersgreenacres.com. They can reach me through there. And the farmhouse telephone number is there. So generally people call there and then they get my cell phone and call me directly. But I think a lot of these things are being handled at a higher level. I'm hearing changes coming out of Washington. This administration that we have is completely different than anything we've seen since JFK, I believe. You're not going to find that out watching CNN and Fox News, but listening to channels like yours, we're getting a little bit more of the truth, or a lot more of the truth about
Give me
what is
some
missing.
examples. Give me some a couple examples before you go on what's coming out of Washington that's personally affecting you so people can see some examples when it comes to your situation.
The death tax. The death tax. Family farms, if I die, the taxation against that farm is so high that my children would be forced to sell it. To who? Industrial ag.
Yeah, I hated that. I'm so glad that's
Change
changing. That's a
Strong
big
10
deal.
from the president. It was huge. That was
Yes.
huge.
What else?
And then, there's a whole bunch of sealed indictments out there right now, and that's got people in state government a little nervous because we don't know exactly what those sealed indictments are.
How do you know they're
And
nervous? Have you talked to people directly that are nervous, or just from listening
none of
to
them are my
shows?
friends. None of the people that would have indictments against them are my friends, all right? My class of people are very proud of the work that they do. A lot of the people who are going to be on the receiving end of these indictments are leeches. They don't do their own work. They steal from people who do work. That's one of the, there's a lot of things that this group of people does. There's my phone. But yeah, that's got the people in state government a little bit nervous. And some of the things that you talk about, the pedo gate and things like that, the people that engage in things like that, this a lot of what they take, they take advantage of working people. So there's bleed over. There is definitely bleed over. They will steal from anybody that produces. In the case of pedo gate, I mean they take children, but
Well,
they'll
that
also
needs to be
take labor
complete.
and.
Don't get me started on that one, because I'm,
So it all
oh,
ties together, Sarah. It
I
all ties
know it does. I know it does. There isn't anything more important than taking care of our kids. I mean, we've had
Well,
decade after decade, and we're creating a disaster. We've created a disaster. It's already there.
yeah. Well, here's a way to put it in perspective. And folks might not like this too well, but tough. It's the way it is. Most average American families, mom and dad work, and they work hard to make ends meet. And then they take care of their children the best they can. But then you have this class of people that it steals the fruits of their labor, and then they steal their children. That's just the way it is. And that's got to end. And a lot of what I've talked about here,
Now,
it is. We're angry.
immediately.
We're angry. And, if you look at jolly old England, where all the king's horses and all the king's men had to be inside the castle, they don't have the luxury of living inside the castle. These people that do these things, they're out here with us in the perimeter, and they're going to have to deal with that. And there's a storm coming. It just is, and the storm is us.
Well,
You know,
excellent.
when the president said this is the calm before the storm, who is the storm he's talking about? The storm is us. People that are hearing me right now and can relate to what I've gone through, they're all over the place. and they're angry and they've said enough. So the collective energy of us saying enough of this crap is more than the forces of evil can even take. They
And it's from
can't
all
bear it.
sides, right? It's not a Democrat, Republican. That's all a big farce, divided, black, white. All this stuff is big. All of us, all walks of life, have been experiencing this stuff. And we need to come together and say enough and stop dividing the country. Well, again, how can people get hold of you? Tell us your website again and go from there.
GreenAcres.com, BakersGreenAcres.com, and then I have a YouTube channel that's Bakers Green Acres as well. I make how-to videos, and then I talk about different farming struggles and things like that. That it's kind of fun. And if a person really wants to get a hold of me, they can get me on Facebook too, Mark Baker on Facebook. And yeah, let's get something going. I think
Well, thank you so
the
much.
trunk of this tree is intact. Right? We're going to be okay.
Well, and people like you fighting, you're an American hero fighting for people. So thank you so much, and thanks for joining us today.
Hey, this was an honor to talk to you. I'll tell the audience that I've been a subscriber to you for a while.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. Have a wonderful day and keep me posted on how it's going.
I'd like to do that.
Okay.
Thanks, Sarah.